Chapter 1. The Snow of Summerland. Dead ends can be resurrected and reshaped into paths ahead. For what lives when dead can never happen yet. Connections, directions, reflections, rejections, they all come together to bring near perfection. The followers afflicted her purpose and remixed it into tricks fit for queen sick to death and want to fix it. Feel the zeal of the demon seal, let it lead you to the real. You'll have to fight in dark or light that burns your right to stay alive. Now cry. This is your host, Redgrin. They say once you go, you don't come back the same. Not really. You leave a part of yourself behind after death. Maybe an empathic echo, or a decision made in the heart of another. This other heart was at least still beating, though not exactly ideal for the task ahead due to its recent strain. It hadn't slowed down in days or maybe weeks now, and Shiera Stone, the owner of said heart, was finally beginning to wonder whether or not it was doctor time. She quickly dismissed this thought as she hurried through the crematorium's arched gateway, remembering that the next few minutes were not about her. No, the next few minutes were about her. Jamie. A troubled childhood and high school friend of Shiera's, who had finally gone off the deep end, or so the rumors had said. At the end of the day, Shiera should have known better. The two of them had recently lost touch due to Shiera moving for university. It went from almost constant contact to mere occasional text being exchanged, social media posts on birthdays, but nothing more. Nothing unusual in that. People lose touch, it happens. And if, for whatever reason, they choose to call you in the middle of a home study session, the polite thing to do is to answer. Shiera had always been polite, a personality trait that her mother insisted on. Shiera couldn't deny that it had its uses, like in social situations involving certain elder family members, for example. The type that thinks they can talk over you and belittle your personal problems because they apparently don't matter. Kill them with kindness. The only thing they can do is either continue or not. Either way, they look like a dick, and you don't. But politeness can create unforeseen circumstances. A friendship was rekindled, a night out on the cards, outfit ideas exchanged, and Shiera politely let Jamie choose the location. That was her second mistake. The hazy memories of that fateful night boiled to the surface of her brain like blood, poised to spurt from a suppurating wound. A lot of alcohol was ingested, and other substances there besides. Not a common occurrence for someone like Shiera, but Jamie had a way of bringing out her impulsive side, not to mention the fact that Shiera had never been very good at disappointing people. Another trait that would prove somewhat harmful as the night continued. The memories grew hazier still, but the intensity never ceased. In her mind, the images changed from a shady bar to a large, ceremonial room. The transition between the two was nothing but a blank space. Individuals clad in red and black robes gathered in a circle. The terrifying backdrop of the blood-red words on the wall, accompanied with oily black depictions of ancient tribal battles. Shiera remembered the fear of realizing she was suddenly in the middle of some sort of sacrificial ceremony when her eyes fell on Jamie. She was sitting opposite Shiera, cross-legged, long wavy hair down in front of her face. Her eyes were hidden, but Shiera could see the beads of sweat running delicately down her face where her skin was visible. Her smile was wide. A feeling of calm washed over Shiera, but on some level she knew that she should be scared. The people clad in robes, who Shiera could only assume were at least some of the occupants from the bar, she could see a pair of legs she had remembered admiring at the beginning of the night briefly cross her vision as her head spun round and round.
Libna Batam Wat Baral Akshatawa. Libna Batam Wat Baral Yem Wat Shatawa Aptal.
Shiera wasn't exactly sure when the surrounding chanting had commenced, but she was too focused on Jamie to really notice. As the chanting became more intense, so too did Jamie's smile and laughter. Shiera didn't think it was possible for anyone to smile that wide without their face imploding. Shiera was about to say something when a light appeared a few meters above the circle, crepuscular, yet no less dazzling, causing the robe-clad chanters to increase their volume and speed, almost as if they were no longer in control of their tongues, like something else was speaking through them. Shiera had no idea what they were saying, but as the light grew brighter, she began to wonder if everything that she had believed when she was a little girl was true. Witches, wizards, magic. The world behind the world. There it was, right in front of her. Having done a fair bit of stage work back in high school, some even with Jamie, Shiera knew stage lighting when she saw it. But this was different. The light appeared virtually just after the surrounding chanting became more unified. As they got louder, the light grew brighter. It was asking Shiera, begging her to raise her arms, her very being, towards the light. And she couldn't stop herself. The beam became warm, comforting, like a parent's embrace, drawing her in to safety. Peace. But there was something else now. Realization versus resignation. Shiera knew that she had been tricked into this right from the start, knew that Jamie, whoever she was, whatever she was, had targeted Shiera specifically, preyed on her desire to be seen as the good one, the hard worker in all aspects of life, the one who never disappoints, the one who doesn't walk away, someone her mother would be proud of. Unlike Jamie, someone who was always getting into trouble, wasting opportunities, getting herself beaten up or arrested, blaming everything on someone else. But would Jamie have fallen for this, whatever this was, so easily if she were in her position? Probably not. All of those stories that Jamie would tell Shiera about the occult, stories that sounded so cruel and depraved and unbelievable to someone like Shiera, that she had learned to, in some ways, shamefully block it all out. She really wished she had paid more attention now. Maybe then, she could have figured out a way to escape the embrace of this brilliant, beautiful light. But no, the diameter of the circle increased, steadily, as if the chanters could sense that their part in this was nearly over. Then came the heat, intense, burning heat, as if whatever the hell was at the center of that thing was fit to burst at any moment. Nevertheless, her hands approached the center of the light. Shiera was on her feet now, positive that the energy from the light and the surround sound prayers would both be enough to lift her from the ground. Was it the drugs? Or was this really happening? Was she really floating? Her retinas were being seared like stakes by the light source. She couldn't help it. Nothing else mattered. She had to know. She had to know what it was. Closer and closer. The burning sensation seemed to be highly concentrating on her chest, specifically her heart, as if with invisible surgical hands clutching to hell's sharpest laser scalpel. A sidearm Shiera was sure of the devil himself. The light began to carve into her chest without hesitation or mercy. Shiera wasn't sure if she screamed. If she even could scream, would she even be heard over the din emanating from the circle of evil that was now somehow below her? The maniacal laughter of the casual mystical kidnapper that had once been her friend bouncing off the walls. Did it even matter? Would anything ever matter again? Yes, Shiera thought as her mind snapped back to the present. Her recently but now permanently bloodshot eyes falling upon the remembrance stone. It had only been a matter of months. Shiera had visited Jamie every day since it had become safe enough to leave her mother's house. The riots had not exactly spread to Shiera's study town, more migrated temporarily since that thing, whatever it was, went on a rampage across Edinburgh, slaughtering hundreds and injuring thousands more. Tears formed in her eyes. So many dead, some of whom she knew. People who had careers to form, portfolios to build, shows to do, kids to have. All gone. And here she was now, a survivor of chaos, pining for death. Death, pure and instant. Everlasting. Because that's where she was. Jamie Mortimer. And Shiera Stone had to find her. She had to. It was her task, her duty, entrusted to her by the light. Seared onto her heart, in life, in death, and thereafter. "I'm coming for you," Shiera said, realizing it was the first time she had spoken that day. "I promise. I'll see you again." Above her, the sky began to darken, rain clouds forming to cry down upon the almost sudden, unbreakable bond the two of them now shared. Once upon a time, she had thought there could be something. But she only grew up in a time of near acceptance, much more frightened to reveal her true nature than others she knew. And now, it wasn't fair. Shiera hadn't asked for this, but she had no choice. Whatever they had done to her during that ceremony, whatever the sigil that was now carved onto the skin of her chest, over her heart like some kind of twisted medicinal scarification signified, it would not allow her to simply walk away from this, to break whatever promise she was tricked into making. That, and her moral code, her mother's voice in her head. "We never turn our back, girl, and we don't walk away, no matter what." Then that prayer, the prayer that had sealed her fate before her time. Libna Baktamwat Baral Akshaktaba. Libna Baktamwat Baral Nemwat Shaktaba Abtal. Shiera sighed in utter exhaustion, planting herself down on the nearest bench to contemplate life as she had been doing for months now. School was cancelled, so naturally Shiera's studious brain gravitated towards all the information she could get her hands on in regards to the occult. It was difficult knowing what to listen to and who to believe when the concept itself seemed so abstract to her. Considering the meaning of the word versus the amount of access modern life allows, even though she had seen behind the curtain, had peeked into the corner of that hidden world, how to find it again? She started with Alice in Wonderland, and felt a little bit like her as she stumbled and tumbled onto other works of the same author, including the Liber Null, a grimoire she was still trying to get a basic grip on. It all seemed so hopeless. Shiera couldn't just simply die. She knew that much. That wasn't enough. There was something else she needed. Some other things she needed to know. First, you need to find out where she is. What the hell? Who was that? Oh, right. Me. She didn't know that yet, of course. As far as she was concerned, I was just a random voice in her head, which, in a way, put me in the driving seat. "Are you there?" she whispered, trying to contain herself. A dog walker passed her by and greeted her with a smile. She smiled back, frozen to the spot, unable seemingly to take her eyes off of the hunting rifle hanging loosely over the humanoid's shoulder. I guess they were all now forced to fear what surely lurked behind the once familiar corners of home. "Most of the time," I replied, trying to contain my laughter. I was lying. This was an entirely new psychic link. I had no previous inside this pretty little head, and so wouldn't see anything her mind didn't want me to see. This connection, for now at least, was a mere audio feed, with a slight feedback loop caused by Shiera's most recent memories. They would be coming in loud and clear soon enough.
"Who are you?"
she asked, tentatively, fidgeting with the buttons on her wool coat. Shiera's body started to notice that it was cold, and began to shiver. The Scottish September weather was closing in all too quickly. Strong winds blowing leaves and tiny bugs in her eyes, and she began to wish she had brought gloves and a hairband.
"It doesn't matter who we are,"
I teased, channeling Bane.
"What matters is our plan."
"What's happened to your voice? You sound sick."
"Oh, everyone's a critic."
"What?"
"Never mind. I can help you. I can help you find her."
"How do you..."
"Not important. Fancy a coffee?"
"A coffee?" Cornerstone Cafe, West End. 20 minutes. I've sent a car. You've sent a... Ah, right on time. Do get in when you're ready. There's a bottle of chilled champagne in the passenger glove compartment. Smoking is permitted. In fact, it's almost a requirement. I don't really smoke, Shaira said. Give it time. Shaira began the walk to the unnecessarily large 4x4 with blacked-out windows parked outside the cemetery gates. I could tell she was nervous, but had spent months coming into this cemetery every day, somehow thinking that being near Jamie's memory stone solidified their bond harder still, and that something may come of it after what she had been through. Someone talking in her head, offering help and providing luxury transportation, and hopefully, free coffee was a welcome change. Jesus, what the hell was that? I was opening the car door for you. Last time I didn't, the passenger shot me. But then I just swam for the surface. Thanks, I guess.
Wait a minute, where's the driver?
Driver? What kind of being do you think I am? Hold on tight. I'll be in touch. Engaging in 5, 4, 3, 2. Shaira's journey took her screaming northwards in the direction of Edinburgh city centre, weaving, speeding, and screaming, narrowly missing a mixture of hopelessly jammed traffic, burnt-out cars, overturned goods vehicles, several abandoned police and military vehicles, the odd wheelie bin, and a host of bent lampposts. Shaira utilized every possible moment of respite to freshen her drink, whether it was traffic lights that still worked or a short break on the roadside while either the car, or me, Shaira wasn't sure, worked out an alternate route due to an unexpected setback. Mostly newly reported vehicle collisions or the occasional explosion, thanks again to this relatively recent black market upgrade. Shaira was grateful for the shaded windows included in the car's interior. She didn't want to think about what she was leaving behind. She didn't know where she was going, but a part of her knew she wasn't coming back. For the last couple of weeks, she'd always brought an overnight bag with her out to the cemetery, either to camp out near there or, well, in case something like this happened. Maybe I told her to bring the bag with her, she thought. No, she was sure I had much better things to do than whisper a list of essentials in her ear in the dead of night. She was right, I did. No, listeners, this was all part of what ceremonial magic can do to the human brain. Ceremonial magic, if not controlled by you, can in many ways force your brain to think in ways you don't particularly want it to. Paranoid thoughts can rise up demonstrably from nothing, and paranoia causes planning to the contrary. Subconsciously, or consciously, we always prepare for the worst. Always. Or we should. The car pulled up a few dozen yards away from the church. I wanted Shaira to exit the car in style, fueled by stationary convenience, but alas, she stumbled several times on the walk to the entrance, thanks to the treacherous path of glass, blood, and rotting food that was stretched out in front of her. "Sorry about the mess," I exclaimed, my back turned, preparing coffee I had brought from home. I was, of course, referring to the state of the cafe. I believe Shaira entered through the window instead of the door, as it had been caved in several places more than several raids ago. Apart from a few stray leaflets, plastic cups, and stirrers, you wouldn't be able to tell it was a cafe. Even the sugar sachets had been cleared out, local resources likely not properly replenished in months. "Who the hell are you?" "You know something," I said, turning and locking eyes with Shaira Stone for the first time. I could tell she was grateful I was no longer talking in her head, but it took her a second to work out my face. I was, of course, smiling widely, like I had a choice, and was still wearing my Saturday's Best from a few episodes back. It had definitely seen better days. I planted myself down on one of the few non-mangled chairs. Shaira sat opposite me, staring with... was that contempt or wonder? I can never tell the difference. "People have been asking me that question a lot lately. Exactly like that. It's why I don't bother leaving the house,"
Who the hell are you? It just takes so much explaining.
Okay.
Shaira sighed, collecting herself and banishing what little disbelief she had left, letting go one final time.
How are you talking in my head?
Because I'm me, I said, sipping my chai latte with cinnamon sprinkles. I gestured to Shaira's. She picked it up, carefully, then sniffed it. It's fine. It's just coffee. Somehow I wouldn't care either way at this point. Understandable. You've been through a lot.
You know what happened to me?
She asked, now sipping her beverage and seemingly enjoying it. Probably a little more than you're able to describe verbally, but I know you feel it all. The fire in your chest, the stabbing pain, the infection.
Infection?
Oh, sorry. Maybe not yet. All side effects of a ceremonial soul bond.
A what?
What do you remember after you touched the bright light?
I remember a feeling of clarity, but I don't exactly remember what I felt clear about, and then blackness. A few dreamlike whispers, and then I was just at my mother's in my childhood bedroom. I planned to stay there while seeing Jamie in the city, but I went straight to the bar from the library. I hadn't seen my mother that day, or at least I don't remember seeing her.
And what about her?
We were just as surprised as each other. I didn't even have a key. I lost it a few weeks ago.
Interesting.
You said you knew where to find her,
she asked. I said I can help you find her.
What's the difference?
I'm merely the tour guide, the one who shows you all the doors. Like a magically gifted Lawrence Fishburne in the 90s, but sexier, and if you can believe it, with a much nicer coat. You, however, are the one holding all the keys.
What do you mean?
Shaira put down her drink.
She began to inwardly study my attire, somewhat perplexed by the various sparkling pendants hanging from the leather collar around my neck. Her eyes moved to the metallic badges fixed to my waistcoat's lapels. Shaira herself had the look of a woman who would much rather spend most of her days in baggy jeans and a flannel shirt, ideally purchased from the more masculine sections of various retail outlets. Instead, however, her upbringing had somewhat forced her to remain, at least aesthetically unfaithful to her inner wants and desires. Somewhat understated. For example, the way she shifted uncomfortably in her seat due to the true tightness of her jeans. They looked welded to her figure, as did the checkered shirt that was tied at Shaira's midsection, revealing her slender stomach beneath. Underneath the shirt was a plain black top designed to accent certain areas she, truthfully, would rather were left to the imagination. Her brown eyes sparkled in time with her olive skin's glow. I cleared my throat, snapping Shaira and, if I was honest myself, back to eye contact. This is your soulmate we're trying to find. Jamie could be anywhere in space, time, afterlife dimension. This is your journey. Where do you want to start? Any ideas? Shaira was about to say something when she stopped. The psychic link was growing fast, and I was beginning to see her conscious thoughts blend into one conflated nightmare. Was Jamie's soul still on Earth? Had she ascended to the halls of Valhalla, drinking and eating hardy with the one-eyed Allfather? Was Jamie trapped in limbo, imprisoned like a lab rat in some vile mystical purgatory of some unknown destructive faith of old, like the Urvan? Had her spirit lingered on this earth for merely 3 days before departing downward into the kingdom, or a kingdom, of the dead? The one ruled by Yima? Or Hades? Or the secret Ice Queen of Summerland? In what little time she had, Shaira had clearly done her homework. Clearly she was a delightful human being who had just found herself in the wrong place at the wrong time. Well worthy of a trans-dimensional trip through the ages, pages, stages, and courageous halls, and not to mention the reversible walls of my humble abode. I dropped my long dessert spoons into my chai latte martini glass, again snapping Shaira out of her reverie.
Come on.
Why don't we start upstairs? In the clock tower, I stood up, dusting the excess cinnamon from my overcoat.
Why upstairs?
She asked, now also getting to her feet. Because that's the last time anyone saw Jamie alive. As herself, anyway. There'll be a trace, I guarantee it. And make sure you bring your cup and spoon. They're specially made.
And how do they know it was her?
Trust me, I said, opening the door to the ruined, rickety staircase. We peered up towards the rusted bell tower, and Shaira grunted in a way that made it clear she wasn't at all looking forward to the climb. I have 3 very good eyes. Is that so? She said, gripping onto the splintered banister, testing it for strength. Again, Shaira gazed up at the nightmare ascent in front of her. Don't worry about the staircase, Shaira. We're taking a more direct route. I held out my hand, not once taking my eyes off of the bell tower above. I had to get the downforce right. The last time I tried this, the same passenger who shot me ended up splattering like a blood-filled pumpkin. Different bell tower, different century. Focus. Laws of physics be damned.
What was that?
Hold on tight. On 3. 1, 2. Three. No splatter. No blood-filled pumpkin. Just regurgitation. Lots and lots of weightless anti-grav vomit. The clock tower, now speckled with Shaira's attempt at a healthy breakfast, she now sat atop it, breathless, spitting and retching from the stress the sudden G-force had put on her body. I should have warned her, I considered, but then again, I was used to traveling with angels. The image of the one with the unbreakable broken wings flashed into my mind. I'm coming for you, I said, realizing it was the first time in a while I had aired my grievances aloud, unintentionally. But, not being able to resist a mirrored thought, I added, I promise. I'll see you again.
What did you just say?
Shaira asked, tentatively. Deja vu.
Something like that.
That's gonna happen quite a bit over the next... I paused, lighting one of my special cigarettes. Black wrap, white filter, green flame, purple smoke. 24 hours. There will be a lot of glitches. Which reminds me, do you have a cat? A cat? Or a cat-like creature in your home? Like a lion or a puma?
Yes, well, we had a cat when I was a little girl, but it died.
I smiled sympathetically, but with more than a hint of mischief. That shouldn't be a problem, dear. Suivez-moi. Blank face. I sighed. Follow me.
And where are we going?
Down.
Down where?
Down there. I pointed to house's threshold, through the newly ancient oak door, down the crystallized passageway towards... Well, we'll come to that in a moment. It was the same threshold house has created for me several months back. There I was, clambering into a world with time, beginning and end. A world that I wished, deep down, I could still call home. The tolling bell. The telltale skin-stripping sound of a monster born inside. Unbidden. Unstoppable. Fighting its way out. Poor Jamie. And there, I said, pointing to the west side of the church roof, and pulling Shaira's attention away from the crepuscular, crystal corridor. God, that felt good to say. That's where she... changed.
Changed?
Shaira queried. Into what? I hesitated. Did I tell her that the soul she was now forcibly bound to was also used and exploited for destructive ends, including the collateral mutilation of her peers? No, not yet.
Well?
She pushed. I knelt down, retrieving a now slightly putrefied mucous membrane sample from the east side of the church roof grounds and placing it in a test tube. It looked to me like one of Jamie's vocal cords. Poor love. She must have coughed them up as the demon bacteria tore her insides apart, firing any useless, unneeded pieces outside the nearest airlock. A useful piece of anatomy for a likely future translocation. Something that it wasn't exactly her choice to turn into. But take it from me, she didn't exactly help herself. Come on. I led Shaira through the oak door, which closed behind us at will. Can't have anything else getting in, or out for that matter. Down the passageway, which I'm almost certain partially blinded Shaira as we made our way towards. Well, I'll wait for the opportune moment for me to say it aloud. What is this place? Shaira gasped. Like, seriously? It's my home. But we were just at the top of the clock tower. And now we're in different dimensions relative to countless points in the space-time continuum and various, but not all, dimensions in the central finite curve that gives way to the axis. The central finite what? We can go almost anywhere you can think of if you know where the door is and, more than that, how to open it. It doesn't always manifest itself as a piece of hinged wood and a handle, and there's almost always a price. And you live here, most of the time, when I'm not busy saving souls and scaring people. You don't scare me. Give it time, I thought, as we came to the end of the passageway. I might not scare you, but this has the potential to do just that. Welcome, Shaira. Welcome to the nerve center. There. That was the opportune moment. 4. Words failed Shaira. Entirely. She had no words. I should know. I was in her head, on a listening-only basis. Now I was within earshot of Shaira, I kindly muted my audio, otherwise it would make me sound like I have a satellite delay in my throat. All I could make out from where I was standing were a series of squeaking noises. You couldn't blame her, of course you couldn't. How did you put what lay in front of her eyes into words? I suppose I could give it a go, aloud of course, for the benefit of my new guest. Above our heads, a glass ceiling, a few thousand feet thick, through which can be seen a collapsing star, one that used to shine down on my home. Now a black hole, suspended in a semi-permanent yet eternally perishable stasis. Not a gravity field of my own design, I'm sorry to say. A great race of people once lived who came up with what we now call Artron energy and Artron particles. Most of them are gone now, too. Not all of them, though. All I did was take this concept and apply it to mystical transdimensional theory. Am I supposed to understand any of that? Not at all. But this, I said, thrusting my hand out dramatically, activating a seemingly invisible initiation procedure, causing holographic images, shapes, and words to cascade and ricochet off the glass walls and ceiling like a swarm of space-bound fireflies. It's the nerve center's interface. It lets us access different routes to dimensional doorways without us having to spend days finding them. Among other things, it also works as an extensive database, entertainment center, and virtual reality playground. I never know when to stop. This place is impossible. Yep. She paused then, gazing once more at the forever-changing words and symbols that she guessed signified some truth of the universe. But, of course, she didn't yet understand it. Shaira thought back on this bizarre conversation, this bizarre journey. What was she missing? Then it came to her.
Why did you ask if I had a cat?
Because Jamie was a witch, and we need an easily recognizable familiar. But it has to be something living and personal to you. But Josie isn't exactly alive. Didn't you hear what I just said? See this? I activated a touch panel that caused the cylindrical shape of the nerve center's interface to rise up with a glassy, metallic whine. Shaira could see another interface-like device mounted on the lower section of the cylindrical glass, but spread over and seemingly attached to the various circuits were living, moving, scaly tendrils. She saw that they snaked all the way down to the glass floor, which itself had various drilled holes for the tendrils to escape through, down towards the blackish-red crystallized depths, and away, to places unknown. To her, anyway. This is a memory matter replicator. I have to come up with a better name. It reconstructs certain living things and most materials found present in memories. You're kidding me, Shaira exclaimed.
So I can recreate Josie just like that, and, like, keep her?
I wouldn't go that far. Animals, cats especially, have this annoying tendency to never come back exactly the way they were when they left. Suitable enough for our purposes, of course, but I wouldn't hold out too much hope.
All right,
she said, trying to collect herself.
yet again not wanting her nerves to get the better of her. Reconstructing a childhood pet wasn't exactly what was on the cards when she left the house this morning. As if she could go back now. What do I need to do? Place your hands on the interface. She did as instructed, trying not to shake as the tendrils stuck to her skin and hacked into her life. I want you to focus on two things, your bond with Jamie and your bond with Josie. Try and hold both of those things in your head and empty out everything else, as if the cat and the witch are the only two beings you have ever known. Shaira closed her eyes. The nerve center's reaction was almost instantaneous. She had managed to telepathically initiate the matter replication process. Now came the second, more important part. You have it in you to find her, Shaira. I encouraged. Focus. Don't ask, why me? Why her? Why now? Just ask this one simple question. Where is Jamie Mortimer right now? Where is she now? Above, the nerve center began to whine, almost in harmony with the unbidden, inverted pedal that was now present at the center of Shaira's brain. The glass floor and ceiling began to shift, as if every grain of sand used to construct it had been taken from the broken hourglass of time itself. New passageways replaced old ones, staircases that stretched seemingly forever, up and down and round materialized, seemingly out of nowhere. I smiled. It appears we have our heading, I said, examining the holographic map produced automatically by the nerve center's GPS system. I looked down to see the two old souls reunited. And you have your Josie. Then it came, the familiar stabbing pain in Shaira's heart. She looked up at me. Think of that as a semi-irregular proximity detector, I said, syncing up the live feed between the nerve center's interface and my mobile device. A what? Josie pawed at her long-lost friend's knee, occasionally springing her claws and being encouraged away by Shaira's waving hand. Then again, and again, like it was yesterday. A semi-irregular... She cut me off.
I heard what you said. You, whatever your name is. But what does it mean?
Well, your souls are bound together, right?
Yeah.
And as a witch, her afterlife dimension is built on the very concept of contemplation. Self-reflection on decisions made in life, to then be erased and reincarnated into something new.
Are you saying she's fading away?
Shaira asked. She looked genuinely scared. I smiled to alleviate the pressure.
I wish. That would be 10 times easier, as we'd only be attempting to beat the clock.
And in a place like this with timeless time, we would forever have a head start. Forever not on the heels of the spinning sands of creation. No, in some cases contemplation and self-reflection can force one to relive the horrors of their past life. And Jamie, well, Jamie
had a shit life, I know. She betrayed me. She tricked me, forced me into loving her. And I hate that I love her for it.
She hurt a lot of people, in life and in some ways in death. But we need her back.
We? Why do you care?
You're asking me that now?
Fair point, but I don't even know your name.
It's better that way. My name doesn't matter. Jamie is what's important. Now pick up that fucking cat and politely follow me into an afterlife dimension. If you would be so kind. 5. Our journey brought us to the heart of Summerland. No easy task, and certainly not ideal for Shaira's scarred heart. The intense burning doing nothing except worsen as we drew closer. I felt for her. Truly I did. The starry treks across oceans of space and frozen sand were long and brutal, despite House's organically formed pathways and gravity fields. Respite, which I required less of, was minimal, thanks to the various elf and cyborg arenas and torture chambers we had to subtly pass through with nothing but our wits and limited speed. Thereafter, the murky, mirrored woodlands of the higher Acatanians seemed to stretch on endlessly. And, would you believe it, no signal, which rendered my GPS pretty much useless temporarily. Alas, we had Josie to thank for safe passage through to the other side. I may have slightly eyeballed the replication process this time around. From there, our journey thankfully ceased being primarily on foot.
we stumbled onto a space-capable speedster several miles over what I had come to call the Soprano Bridge, a structure constructed entirely from the vocal vibrations of the Celestials of old, under which stared the Eye of Disharmony. Well, one of them anyway. I usually came across them when nearing the entrance to a dimension dedicated to the hereafter. We were getting close. I could feel it. And thanks to her heart, Shaira certainly could too. The vibrations would reverberate around your body as you made your way gingerly across those undeniably convenient, if invisible, bridges. The bridge's pitch and the eye's stare would depend on the desired destination, the desired soul, and the intentions of the travelers themselves. In this case, Shaira and I. This was the easiest part for her. Her intentions were pure, even if they had been forced on her. And Josie, well, she was the key to the door leading to our desired destination. My journey over the bridge, however, was fraught with stress and paranoia due to my seemingly impure intentions. Shaira was out of earshot thanks to my decreased walking pace, but I managed to say, as if some sort of penance for what I was about to do, "When this is all over, all of it, I'm coming back for Shaira. And when I do, I'll be walking alone. No cats, no convenient bargaining chips. Just me." One short hyperspace trip just outside House's gravity field, and a further feline retinal scan later, we reached our destination. Summerland. Or in this case, Winterland, thanks to Jamie's questionable life decisions and her blackened, rage-fueled hindsight view of said decisions as garnish. It was raining, or rather snowing blood. A blizzard of red soaked my shadow in the light of the cold sun. It would take me a very long time to wash that off, given what I was about to do. 6. It didn't take long for us to find Jamie. All we had to do was follow the footsteps of the self-reflected Sinbad that Jamie still didn't believe she was free of. She wasn't, not totally. Not without our help. In Shaira's case, a lover's kiss and embrace. One that I knew Jamie had planned for. In my case, a simple incantation when their souls touched for one final time. Libna Bhaktamwat Baral Shaktaba. Libna Bhaktamwat Baral Nemwat Shaktaba Aptal. I hadn't given Jamie enough credit back in episode 15, listeners. Her self-teaching skills were second to none. Jamie had made a lot of enemies throughout her apparent investigation. Some human, some not, but all wanted her dead. Or at the very least, silenced due to her intricate involvement in the Devil's Heaven project. Undercover or not, they had been using her in much the same way they had been using the others. Draining their essence and converting it into energy necessary for dimensional collective access. Energy which, if left unchecked, can go haywire. And it did. It reflected on her. It reflected on her particular perspective of the world around her. Jamie had never been blind to the darkness hovering on the periphery of our vision, and there were now very few left in the city she called home who were. But she knew that her contributions wouldn't be enough to let her continue living with the knowledge of that experiment in her head. Too high a risk of exposure for both her and the facility, and so, having secured some trusted followers over the months of frequent experimentation, she came up with a bright idea. Literally, in this case, conning Shaira, a near-distant friend she shared enough history with to be able to lure her to that place at the drop of a hat. Maybe the water got too hot, and Shaira was the first person she could think of. It didn't seem fair that Shaira wasn't going to survive this. We'd probably never see her mother again. But she would die believing she did the right thing. Which she did, because I needed Jamie back. "Why?" she asked me, back in the nerve center, Shaira's cat pawing at her leg in the same way she had before. "Why did you come for me? I don't even know who you are." Nobody does. Not really. But I'm trying to save my friends. They were taken. Taken by someone stronger than me. I can't fight them. Not now. Not alone. I need help. I stood up from where I had been sitting for what felt like days, my head bowed in nightmare meditation, contemplation of the monster's forthcoming. I got you out of hell, Jamie. For a price. A hell of your own making. And I'll be damned all over again if I'm gonna let it be for nothing.